What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. I'm joined by your favorite beat reporter, Chris Fedor. Chris, how did you enjoy today's quote-unquote off day during this long stretch of the season?
That was wonderful. A whole day. I wish it would have been nicer outside. Let me rephrase that. It was about 40 degrees here in Bay Village, closer to the lake, so it's usually like 10 degrees colder here in Bay Village than it is basically anywhere else in Ohio, or at least within 25 to 30 minutes in Ohio, that range. So it could have been warmer, so I could have gone outside with the family today, but it was great to spend time with Elliot. He was a riot today. He just wants to try and talk and put sentences together. And we danced to some Taylor Swift. We danced to some Body. You name it. It was a good time.
I know our fans want us to get into the basketball, and it's playoff season, so we are going to keep this very brief, talk about some fun things. But Chris, how long have you been a Taylor Swift fan? Because you talked about during the game, or before the game, let me say, about looking forward to the album release and
playing it.
When did that start?
First of all, not just any album release, Ethan, okay? Tortured Poets Department. Let's get that straight. Us Swifties take it very, very seriously. It's not just another album. Every album has significance and every album is known by name. Thank you very much. When did it start? Jeez, man. At the beginning? Teardrops on My Guitar, maybe?
Wow. Okay.
It was way back.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think she had me at her first album.
I don't know what the saying is. I was unfamiliar with your game. That's the one. Yeah. And Chris, that's phenomenal. I mean, Taylor Swift, we talked about it during the football season, was great. And I don't think you pointed to the fact that you were a big Taylor Swift fan then, and that's why it caught me off guard.
I got news for you, for everybody that listens to this podcast. The ideas that come to my head late at night following games, the stories that I write following games, they are always with the soundtrack of Taylor Swift going. I do not write without Taylor Swift playing.
Taylor Swift, the GOAT, is Chris Fedor's muse. Love it. Cannot make these things up, okay? All right, now back to the nitty-gritty of why people are here. I mean, Chris probably is here so he can listen to the podcast while listening to the Taylor Swift later. But besides the point, the Cavs won game one. We talked about our initial reactions. Now we got to talk about how the Orlando Magic is going to respond in game two and how the Cavs will have to respond yet again. We know that the Cavs have an advantage in experience in shooting going into this series, and they exploited that in the first game. But the Cavs didn't shoot well, nor did Orlando shoot well, and we know this was going to be a defense first game, but Chris and I have both pointed to the experience that the Cavs have had and the importance that, because it being a defensive-minded game, that one team is going to have to play better offensively than the other. And that's going to have to be the consistent theme. We've seen articles being written about the Orlando Magic, about being a team that they are not, which is a scoring team. And what the Cavs are known for is playing defense in the paint with their two twin towers in Evan Mobley and Jared Allen. So it's like the Orlando Magic have met the worst possible team to play in this first round. And Chris, that sounds really familiar for Cavs fans, I bet, in how they faced the Knicks last season. But looking at what the Cavs are going to have to face in the game two and how Orlando could change, we want to talk about how they guarded Cavs players in the first game. Donovan Mitchell being guarded by multiple different guys, Jalen Suggs being one of the primary people there, Paolo Banchero taking the matchup, sometimes with Jared Allen, sometimes with Evan Mobley, Evan Mobley being guarded by Cole Anthony instance. What do you think that the Orlando Magic could do defensively differently that the Cavs will have to prepare for while trying to improve their offensive game, Chris?
It's interesting, Ethan, because there was a big part of me that thought coming into this series that Jalen Suggs, who is going to be on one of the all-defensive teams in the NBA, I thought he was going to be on Donovan. And that's what the Magic did in the regular season. He got the primary assignment against Donovan Mitchell. But it's interesting to me because it feels very similar to the strategy of the New York Knicks last year in the playoffs. I think there's this idea from opposing teams that it's easier to rattle and make Darius Garland uncomfortable. So there's an opportunity that Jalen Suggs, as an elite defender, has more success against Darius than he does against Donovan. So why waste Jalen Suggs on Donovan when he's probably not going to get the best of Donovan anyway? You know what I mean? Why not try Jalen on Darius and see if he can pressure him full court? See if he can be really, really physical with him. See if he can grab him and bump him and not allow him to get into the paint. So there was part of me coming into the series that was a little bit surprised, especially early on when I saw Jalen Suggs against Darius. But then I thought back to last year against New York, and it is kind of logical. And I think you can disrupt the Cavs' offensive flow if you get Darius uncomfortable, if you start making him commit turnovers, if you start sending an extra body at him, him dribble the air out of the basketball, all of a sudden the shot clock is ticking down and the Cavs aren't really in their offensive set. So I don't know that that's actually going to change. I think Orlando is going to continue to stick with Suggs on Garland and see if they can disrupt Darius and just believe in Gary Harris's experience, his tenacity, his matchups with Donovan in past series, and see what that gets them. The other thing that stood out to me from game one, Ethan, was that for a majority of Orlando's offensive possessions, they were run through Paolo. And that's not surprising. Paolo's their leading scorer. Paolo led them in points, rebounds, assists. He was their all-star. But if you're going to do that, you're inviting a matchup against Evan Mobley. Everybody knows how good Evan Mobley is. And look, you can set screens with other guys, you can force switches, you can find a way to get Paolo off of Evan. But the primary matchup seems to be Evan Mobley against Paolo. And if Orlando is going to continue to run their offense through Paolo, who had a usage rate over 30% in game one, then you're inviting a matchup against one of the best individual defenders in the NBA. A guy who can guard on the perimeter, a guy who can contest shots, a guy who can protect the paint, a guy who can block shots at the rim. And even though Evan did not qualify this year for any of the end-of-season awards, before he got injured and he missed that large chunk of games, Evan was viewed again as a guy who is an all-defensive type player. That's the kind of impact that he makes on the defensive end of the floor. That's the kind of impact that he has made on defense since coming into the NBA. So I wonder if Orlando's going to try and run more offense through Franz as opposed to Paolo and see if there's a little bit less resistance.
Yeah, Chris. And I mean, you talk about how great Evan Mobley is as a defender. He was the third highest defensive rated player for the Cavs with 81.1. Like, that is fantastic. And most of those matchups were against Paolo, but he also had different matchups with other players, and he was able to shut them down as well. And we've gotten to see Evan Mobley continue to show his defensive prowess on countless occasions. But, Chris, that's not really the aspect of his game that we were focused on coming into this series, because we know that Evan can play defense. That's something he's been known for since he came into the league. But Evan Mobley adding his three-point shot, which he added after he got surgery on his knee and wanted to continue to be in the lineup and be used as an offensive weapon, and also just continue to help the narrative that Jared Allen and Evan Mobley on the court at the same time makes sense, him being able to space the floor with his shooting ability is a big play for him to be able to do that. And Chris, thinking about what Darius Garland is going to have to deal with Jalen Suggs as his primary defender, we saw it in game one. Darius, in the first quarter, initiated the chippiness a little bit. He literally was trying to get an inbound play and shoved Jalen Suggs off of him. And everybody kind of looked around for a second and tried to see if a foul was going to be called like it would be in the regular season. But it wasn't. And Darius got the ball inbound and they just kept on going. And Darius talked about the physicality of that and being able to throw the first punch. And I know that's a horrible cliche that we have used too much because this team keeps saying it. But
wait,
I think it is something that is going to be important to see from Darius, who is dealing with a little bit of back stiffness, who is not used to being the primary ball handler with the primary defender when Donovan Mitchell is also on the court. Like, he will bring the ball up and be the primary ball handler, but he's used to having the number two defender, number three defender on him when it comes to guards. But him being able to respond like that and then also having the fourth quarter that he had, I think is really important for Darius. But we talked about the necessity for Darius Garland to have that kind of impact like he had in the fourth quarter in game one throughout the entire game without turning the ball over, without committing dumb fouls. Like, those are the situations that we have to look for Darius. And what are you expecting from him specifically, especially with having eyes taken off of him with Donovan Mitchell playing like he did in the first game?
Darius just has to run the offense, and Darius just has to get the team organized, and he has to make sure that the pace is up, and he has to make sure that they're getting into their offensive sets before the shot clock starts ticking away, and he's got to make sure that he values possessions and he doesn't play with a level of nonchalance. Those are the things that I'm looking for from Darius. Making threes, taking threes, that would be a big deal too. Finishing, giving them a second scoring boost, that would be good too. But I just think, like, if we're talking about this series as a whole, Ethan, I think the hierarchy in terms of the offensive scoring split, because of the way that this one sets up from a matchup perspective, I just don't know that it's all that logical for the Cavs to try and continue to go Darius against Jalen Suggs, Darius against Jalen Suggs, Darius against Jalen Suggs. It's like banging your head into a wall. There's a path of least resistance in this series to me, and it's Evan Mobley taking advantage of mismatches on switches, Jared Allen taking advantage of mismatches on switches, Donovan Mitchell against Gary Harris. I think that's favorable for the Cavs. So to me, playoffs are so much about, yeah, you have to be who you are, who you were throughout the course of the regular season. And the Cavs aren't going to abandon the Darius Garland, Evan Mobley two-man game. They're not going to abandon Darius Jared Allen two-man game. They're not going to abandon the Darius Garland high pick and roll stuff, right? But you also have to find the matchups that you believe are going to be favorable for you at both ends of the floor. And I just don't think Darius versus Suggs is a favorable pathway for the Cavs to have consistent offensive success. And again, there are going to be cross matches and there are going to be switches, but the general concept of attacking Orlando's best defensive player with a guy in Darius who can turn the ball over a little bit too much, who can take bad shots at times, who can get the offense bogged down from time to time, I just don't think that's all that logical. I look at this series, Ethan, as more of an Evan Mobley, Jared Allen type series, because I do believe that the Cavs have a significant advantage in there, especially if teams are going to commit multiple bodies on Donovan Mitchell or have, you know, the help defense kind of hugged up toward wherever it is he is. I think the Cavs can find pockets of success through Jarrett, through Evan, just like they did in game one. The other thing that I think Darius has to allow the Cavs to do is just, in some ways, break down the defense, make them make a commitment, and try and get other guys open three-point shots. And for the Cavs to only take 30 threes in the first game against the Magic, I think they go into game two with a general idea of, can we get that number up? How do we get that number up? It's probably going to be important for us to do that.
Yeah, and you talk about the shooters and the shooting and the three-point shooters, and I want to talk about somebody that the Cavs had to go get this past offseason because they knew that they needed toughness, they needed experience, they needed shooting. And for somebody who only had 7 points in the entire game, Max Strus was the highest-rated offensive player for the Cavs with an offensive rating of 108.8. And he also grabbed 9 rebounds, which is huge from a guard/forward position for the Cavs in this series. And I want to look back to last year just a second, because Jetty Offman grabbed 15 total rebounds in the entire Knicks series. He was Cleveland's fifth highest rebounder. Max Strus, like we just said, had 9 rebounds in the first game. Obviously, 7 points on 105 shooting from 3-point range is not what you want from him, but being able to impact the offensive game, being able to spread the floor, for somebody to need to pay attention to you, that is something that you cannot take for granted. And him and George Niang both ended the game with a plus 13 plus minus rating, which is huge. I mean, George Niang had just 5 points, and he was somebody that the Cavs could go to, and he also was the second highest rated offensive player. So, and if you want to look at net rating, Chris, because I know that's your biggest teller stat, George Niang and Max Strus were 1 and 2 in that area. And I think those two guys showed their importance in how they can impact this series and how this Cavs team is different from last year with having those two guys not only on the wing but on the defensive end as well. And just the pure threat of having them available to shoot at any given moment as well. And I also think that Sam Merrill being on the court and getting those reps, even though he only put up 1 or 2 shots, I think that's good for him to get acclimated and see what he's able to do in those scenarios. And Chris, I think that JB could see potential to go to Sam Merrill more during the series, but it matters more about who's on the court for the Magic, I believe.
I also think it matters more how effective George Niang is going to be. Because the other two options that JB could go to in this series, and I'm told that there is a plan in place that if he has to make an adjustment when it comes to the ninth guy and make it not Sam Merrill because he just doesn't believe that he's a fit in this series, he's not providing enough on the offensive end, Max Strus is giving them Sam Merrill-type things, there is a plan in place to go to Tristan Thompson for size, for toughness, for rebounding, for experience. There is also a plan in place, if needed, to go to Marcus Morris Sr. So it's just going to be based on what does JB feel like the Cavs need from that ninth guy on any given night. And maybe it is going to be the gravity and the spacing and the shooting of Sam Merrill. Maybe it is going to be the cutting. Maybe it is going to be the off-ball movement. Or maybe George Niang is just not playing well enough on the defensive end of the floor. He's not making shots. And you need somebody else that can fill those backup power forward minutes. Marcus Morris Sr. is a logical fit. So it's just going to be one of those things, just the way that it has been throughout the course of this year, where it's about game flow, it's about matchup, it's about feel. But when it comes to Max, JB has been saying it throughout the course of the year. Teammates have been saying it throughout the course of the year. Max has shown that he is much more than just a shooting specialist. He can pass. He had a triple-double in the final game of the regular season. His first one is an entire career. He averaged career highs in rebounds. He averaged career highs in assists. He's getting to do more things within the offense here in Cleveland than what was available to him in Miami. And that's allowed him to kind of tap into different skill sets that maybe a lot of people around the NBA didn't believe that he had. But it's something that the Cavs need, right? And yeah, his shooting is really, really important to their success. And his spacing is really, really important. And the level of attention that he commands, you could just see it. Early in the game against Orlando, just having Max in the weak side corner, that was a big deal. That made things easier on Donovan, on Darius. It opened things up in what could be a crowded paint usually with Jared and Evan together. So everywhere Max goes, the defense is paying attention. The defense is trying to be hugged up on him because he has a reputation that if he gets a sliver of space, that three is going up, and it's going in at a 35 to 40% clip depending on the quality of that shot. And that's a really, really good weapon to have. That's a guy who has brought a different dynamic to this offense. And I've said since really the beginning of the season that Max was going to be one of their most important players, and it was not about him necessarily. It's about what his presence on this team means to everybody else. And you felt that. in game one. And I think you're going to continue to feel that throughout the course of the series. And here's the other thing, Ethan. I think Orlando knows it. I think people around the NBA know it. And I think the Cavs know it. One of those Max Strus 4 to 5, 6 three-pointer games is coming. And it's probably going to win the Cavs one of these games.
Yeah, and he had the first shot and make of the game in game one. And I was concerned for the Magic's health that that was going to be the 4, 5, 6 three-point game to start this series. Because you know that Rocky Mortgage Fieldhouse would have been dang near in a blaze if that was the case. But you talked a little bit about George Niang's defense, and I wanted to get into that a little bit. There was a specific play that I liked from George where Paolo Banchero is somebody that has trouble when he's against the baseline, and he uses that as a second or third defender, depending on if he's in the corner or not. And George Niang had literally pushed Paolo Banchero into a corner, and Paolo just threw it over his head to get the ball from staying out of bounds as he was leaning out of bounds, and that led to a turnover, but more importantly, that was the play that led to Donovan Mitchell's ferocious dunk. And one, needed that from Donovan. As Christian said before, that was Donovan's just second dunk since the All-Star break. He had been getting a couple of dunks in pregame to test his legs before the game on Saturday, and it was incredible to see him just lift off, and it looked like he cocked back a little further than he usually does to put some emphasis on it, and the crowd loved it. He was screaming, getting into it, and like we've said, the playoffs are an energy-filled contest. It's something that you can feel the arena, you can feel the aura, you can feel the pressure, all of those things. Possessions matter. And in that little swing with George Niang being the defensive catalyst, that's something you don't usually see for the Cavs.
Okay.
It gives an extra little push, because when you have somebody do it like that, I don't know, man, I like that.
Easy with the over-the-top. Defensive catalyst.
What else was George the word Niang? That I would use for that? He stopped Paolo Banchero and made him turn the ball over.
On one play.
Yeah, on that particular play. That's it. But he was a defensive catalyst on that play.
On that play. Yes, you're right. Other than that, he struggled defensively. We can admit that, right?
Yes, we can both admit that. I was saying, but against Paolo Banchero.
Yes, it was one play.
Yes, it was a surprise. And for him to be able to do that, that was a bigger moment to set off a chain reaction, which with the end was the dunk.
Agreed.
Okay.
But according to NBA matchup data, Paolo Banchero went 5 of 6 from the field against George Niang. Most of his production came against George. And I think that's something that will probably continue throughout the course of this series. Look, the Cavs don't need George to be Evan Mobley. He's not going to be Evan Mobley. He's not going to be that type of defender. He just needs to not get targeted, hunted, put into foul trouble, and roasted on the defensive end. Okay? But if he does have problems matching up with either Paolo or Franz, like he did in game one, and he can be tough, and he can be physical, and he can make those guys work, but if they're going to continue to have that success against George, then you're right. It's really important for him to bring the other elements of his game. Find a way to make an impact in a different kind of way. Whether that's spacing the floor, whether that's just leadership, whether that's, you know, getting in your teammates' face and holding them accountable for a bad play, whether that's picking them up when it seems like their confidence is starting to waver, whatever it is that makes George such a great teammate and such an asset to this team. If he's going to continue to struggle on the defensive end of the floor, there has to be another way for him to consistently justify getting minutes in the close to 20 range, right? Because I just don't think, like, if those other things aren't happening too, if he's not knocking down shots, if he's not moving the basketball, if he's not making the right play on offense, if he's not providing the energy and the lift that the team needs, I don't think JB would hesitate to go to Marcus Morris Sr.
And I don't think that would be a wrong move. I think Marcus Morris Sr. is known to be another tough guy, another probably better defender than George Niang, and he can match up with size and those things.
Can probably move his feet a little bit better on the perimeter.
Yep, 100%. And also just having Marcus and know that he's earned that opportunity, going from a 10-day to a end-of-the-season contract and getting him the opportunity. And like we've said, George Niang, Max Strus, Tristan Thompson, Marcus Morris Sr., those are the guys that are willing to bark, chirp, whatever. And sometimes even just that can be an impactful thing. And Marcus Morris Sr. can bring defense. He can bring intensity. He can bring chirping. So all of those things wrapped up and being a better defender than George Niang, that's a little bit more so the activity that we would want on Marcus Morris. And he can create his own shot.
And here's the other thing too, Ethan. This is important when it comes to a 7-game series. There are going to be various moments throughout the series and throughout games where you just have to go to a different look, where what you were planning isn't working the way that you want it to, and you have to go to a different look. I mean, look at the third quarter. At the beginning of the third quarter, Donovan Mitchell was having a hard time getting all the way to the basket, right? The paint was a little bit clogged. The court was crowded in general. Orlando is starting to make its run, cut the lead to 5, in part because the Cavs' offense just didn't come out of the locker room with the same enthusiasm, with the same effectiveness, with the same attention to detail. And Orlando made a few different adjustments, and it kind of took the Cavs out of their rhythm. So JB saw that, and he said, hey, look, time to try something different. And it was kind of quick, maybe a little bit quicker than anticipated, but he said, we need more floor spacing. We need more shooting. We've got to open up some driving lanes for Donovan and Darius. We can't allow them to have to work so hard against the Orlando defense. Let's try and make it easier on those two guys. Let's try and make it easier on the offense as a whole. And George Niang comes into the game. He replaces Evan Mobley because we understand that there's just a different level of gravity when George is out there as opposed to Evan, even though Evan made the two early threes. They just don't guard him out there, and they're not going to guard him out there. So he took out Evan, he went to George, and then Donovan got immediately to the basket. On the very next possession, he took the ball right into the lane, got to the basket, and it looked like the Cavs kind of exhaled on the offensive end. So there may be other times throughout the course of this series where, you know, the Cavs have to give a different look, and it means taking Jared Allen off the court instead of Evan Mobley, or it means going to a small ball lineup, or it means going to some unique Tristan Thompson, Evan Mobley thing that JB tried at the end of the regular season. Who knows? What happened in game one is not necessarily going to happen in game two and game three and game four, and you have to have the ability and the flexibility to just throw a different look out there because what you're doing isn't working as well as it needs to. And I thought for JB to do that quickly, recognize it that quickly, those are the kinds of in-game adjustments that are usually going to potentially shift a series or shift a game. And those are the kinds of in-game adjustments that JB was a little bit slower to do last year against the Knicks. And I thought that showed growth from him as a coach.
Yeah, we know that he doesn't like talking about last season and how he learned and growing.
He most certainly does not. And I think everybody understands why he doesn't like to talk about that.
Correct. So him being able to do that is important, him growing. And obviously, like you said, Chris, I think that's the beauty of the playoffs is every game can be different in a different aspect because you never know what the opposing team is going to throw at you or you never know what the Cavs are going to have available to them or what's working. I think I want to talk about, to end the podcast, the confidence level of this team and why they should be so confident and what is important for them to be confident with. Because we talked all season long, the joy, the camaraderie of this team is what makes this engine go, and how they play together is such an easy flowing thing that allows them to play almost seamlessly together whenever they have anybody on the court. Everybody's got experience playing next to each other. So And being able to throw anybody on the court, they can just mesh and get along. And I think that's a portion of the confidence that they should have, is like, no matter what lineup, no matter what rotation they have on the court, they can play together and know that they're going to be effective. And the other part of that is, if they aren't being as effective as they thought, J.B. Bickerstaff showed in game one that he's willing to make those adjustments and get other players out there to make a change. And like Chris said, like we've said all this season, is the changes and the opportunities to make those changes and is different from last year. The Cavs didn't have guys like that that they could just willy-nilly go to and know that they're going to have them be successful or make a immediate change as they did last year. Like, these rotation guys, these guys off the bench, because they got so much experience during the season with the injuries and stuff like that, they're hungry. They're ready. They want to be on the court. And I think that's important, and the confidence is growing for this team.
And here's the other thing, Ethan. It's very, very hard to sit here and criticize anything related to the Cavs from game one. It doesn't mean that they were perfect. It doesn't mean it was the best performance that they've had all season. You know, they didn't even crack the 100-point mark. But it was a wire-to-wire win in the playoffs. And every time Orlando put a little bit of pressure on them and started to get closer, they kept their composure and they answered every single one of those Orlando runs. So the Cavs deserve ton of credit for the way that they played in game one, regardless of the opponent. Here's a question that I have for you, though.
Okay.
And maybe it's not going to matter. Maybe Orlando is just so woeful on the offensive end and they don't have enough pathways to consistent success that they're going to just struggle to reach the 85, 90 point mark or something like that. Because when they played against these caliber defenses during the regular season, they had the worst offense in the entire NBA statistically. So maybe it's just not going to matter all that much, but game one was a Donovan game, right? That was Donovan, not at his best, but for a playoff stage, set the tone, game one, 30 points, 11 of 21 from the field, 3 of 8 from three-point range, bounciness, explosiveness, change of direction, burst, lift, all that kind of stuff. That was a Donovan game. That was the kind of game that the Cavs had been waiting for a majority of the second half. And he delivered that. And they still didn't score 100 points. Like, at what point do you start to become worried about that?
I think that also has to do with the defense of the Orlando Magic.
Of course.
I mean, so
Cavs are playing against the third best defense in the NBA in this series. Yeah, you're right.
So I think more so I would be more concerned if they don't break 100 in game two. Maybe, or game three. I think they just have to break 100 at least twice this series. Because, again, they're going to go up against either the Boston Celtics or the Miami Heat. And if we're being completely honest, pretty sure it's going to be the Boston Celtics. And they're a really good defensive team. And they can actually score the basketball. So I don't think I get concerned this series, to say the least. But maybe when they get to Boston. But I think that if Darius Garland is not able to put the ball through the hoop at a better caliber, if Max Strus doesn't start hitting shots, if George Niang doesn't start hitting shots, like, we know Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are going to get theirs in the paint. They're going to be able to create for each other, create for their teammates and things like that. But I think it really turns to the shooters of this team. And I wouldn't say that there's a concern level yet. Or somehow, if the Orlando Magic's offense just clicks on at some point during this series, which I don't foresee happening, but if that happens, then the Cavs would have to respond. And that's the simplest way to put it. Like, you have to be able to match the caliber of who you're playing or level up. And like you said, if the Orlando Magic are scoring 85 to 90 points a game, I don't think the Cavs are too concerned, because should be able to get to at least 95 a game, but you want to at least break 100. But when it's up against a team that is more offensive-minded like Boston, I know we don't want to look too far ahead, but that's my main thought process. This is not the team to be concerned about against offensively when it comes to the Orlando Magic.
That's the thing. You don't want to overreact. You don't want to overanalyze. But the Cavs got 14 points from their bench in game one.
True.
Think about that. 14. Donovan went for 30 and they still had an offensive rating right around 100. You know, at some point, you just have to feel like this offense is going to be capable of more.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because if they're going to go on a deep run, if they're going to get past Orlando in this round and actually put pressure on their next opponent, probably Boston, offense just, it's going to have to be at a higher level. If we're looking at last year, and we understand that this isn't the same team, there are different pieces, there are different components and things like that. But if you just like look around what typically wins and what typically is good enough in the postseason in terms of offensive rating, you know, what the Cavs did the other night against Orlando, that ain't it.
Not even close.
For being honest, that ain't it.
No, I mean, that's what I was trying to say is, like, this team has to break 100. That's, like, the most important thing for this team. And Darius Garland can not score only 8 points in the fourth quarter and scoring six in the rest of the game. Like, that's not acceptable. Evan Mobley scored all of his points in the first half. That's unacceptable. Max Strus didn't really have an offensive game. He scored 7 points, 1 of 5 from three. Then you look at Caris LeVert, you look at George Niang. Like, yes, everybody else needs to step up around Donovan. We understand that Donovan is going to be the leader of this team scoring-wise. He's more than likely going to take the most shots every single night, which, as the best player, you should. But with that, the surrounding players need to do their thing as well. And we looked at Game 1. They won Game 1. They didn't break 100. They didn't have a great offensive game. George Niang even said that they hit the first 5 threes.
And then they missed like 18 in a row, yeah.
Somebody put a lid on the basket. So that's just what happens sometimes. But Game 2, you want to see them take an uptick in offensive rating. You want to get to see them hit their three-pointers, trying to shoot more of those because they know that that's their game and what helps them be successful. But I don't think there's a way to overreact both ways.
Right.
You can't say
right.
The offense was horrible. They won the game. You can't say that the offense doesn't have room to improve. That's why I was saying when it comes to concern level, I don't think I could be concerned about the offense for the Cavs in this series, particularly with how bad Orlando's offense is.
When the final game wraps up tonight here on Sunday night between Oklahoma City and New Orleans, the Cavs will have, after all of the game ones have been completed, the Cavs will have the fourth worst offensive rating. Just putting it out there. Something to monitor. Let's put it that way. Something to monitor as this series progresses.
I mean, what's crazy to think about, I know we don't want to look at games around the league, but this is going to be very quickly. The Indiana Pacers, who had the highest points per game in the league during the regular season, scored just 94 points against the Giannis Antetokounmpo-less Milwaukee Bucks. So that should tell you the different level of intensity, physicality, all of those things when it comes to the playoffs that the Indiana Pacers are not that adjusted to, but also how offenses can sometimes just shrink and shots don't fall sometimes in the playoffs. So I think that is what happened in the first game for the Cavs. Things just don't go your way. I don't think there's going to be another game when the Cavs miss 18, 19 three-pointers in a row. That was insane. So, yeah, Chris, I think it's something to keep an eye on, not something I'm concerned about at the moment. Is there anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap up today's podcast?
No, I don't think so.
All righty. Well, with that being said, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But until next time, become a Cavs insider and interact with Chris and me by subscribing to Subtext. You can get all the insider information that we can give you during the game, after practices, and things of that nature by subscribing to this subscription service. We give you inside information on injuries, anything that might have happened that could impact the Cavs during this series, and we just give you insight stats that you might not have access to. So to get to this, sign up for a 14-day free trial or visit cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy, but we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.